Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 93 of Generation GC, Secrets from the Chronicles of Life and Death, Good Charlotte's third album, released in 2004 with Gora Shaker. My name is Molly Huddleston, once again, and as always, I am your host as well as the producer, creator, and editor of this podcast. Last time, we talked about the story of my old man from The Young and the Hopeless. On our next episode, we'll be talking about a song from Good Morning Revival. I wanted to say thank you to everyone listening for staying with me. This episode is coming out a few weeks later than planned. I've just had a lot going on in my personal life. I'm getting knee surgery in a few days, and obviously that's rough, but it's going to be something that's really, really helpful for me in the long run, and I cannot wait to just be more mobile, be recovered, less pain, be able to do a whole lot more, and I'm super happy to be working on this episode and getting this episode out to you right now. Gora Shaker is the founding co-editor of No Contact. Her essays, interviews, and fiction have appeared in Literary Hub, The Toast, Volume 1 Brooklyn, The Rumpus, Nimrod, Sonora Review, Craft, and elsewhere. Gora's debut novel, Notes, is forthcoming from Word West Press in late 2022. You can find her online at Blood and Gora and GoraShaker.com. If you've been listening to the show for a while and you're thinking to yourself that the name Gora Shaker sounds familiar, that's because it probably is. Several years ago, Gora wrote a personal essay about Good Charlotte that I have cited in a handful of episodes. It's just really, really lovely, wonderful piece, and I am super excited to have her on the show. I also want to say that I love having guests from all around the world and from all different backgrounds on Generation GC. If English isn't your first language, that's okay. As long as you're comfortable holding a conversation in English, you're good to go. And different backgrounds doesn't just mean location or ethnicity. It means ensuring a varied gender and sexuality representation and representing fans of different ages and fans with your own unique life experiences of any sort. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, hey, wow, I want to be on this show. I have something to say. I want to share my perspective. Hit me up. Reach out. I'd love to hear from you. Finally, Generation GC stickers are here. If you do want a sticker, all you've got to do is go to anchor.fm/generationGCpod and click support, and I will send you some stickers. You're going to hit me up over email, that's generationGCpod@gmail.com, or Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, generationGCpod, and send me a screenshot of your support of the show as well as your mailing address, and I will send you some stickers. All that money goes right back into helping me make the show the best that it can be, helps me print and ship the stickers. It also helps me get equipment that I need, like a laptop riser so I can see my screen while I record, cables, chargers, new headphones. Also helps me with just things I need around the office, like notebooks, pens, post-its, that kind of thing, just to stay organized and help me brainstorm and keep on top of everything. Well, that is about it for our intro, and now on to episode 93.
So today we are talking about Secrets, which is track 8 on the Chronicles of Life and Death, Good Charlotte's third album released in 2004. Track 7 is Predictable. Track 9 is The Truth. And I don't know about you, Gora, but like as I was thinking about this track listing, it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition just with like the emotions they share. Like Predictable is very like angry, right? And this song is, we'll talk about it more, but I feel like this song is like more like vulnerable and a little more optimistic. And then The Truth is like, I don't know, like desperation almost. It's just an interesting like cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this album like by and large leans into the concept albumness of like life and death. And it's funny because like I was just looking at the track list again this morning, and it's funny that like the first half of it is just like pretty much like it's almost like angrier, or it has like more angst to it. And then it sort of like mellows out at about this point and with Secrets, and then it goes into The Truth. And I think there's like, It Wasn't Enough and Mountain, and it's sort of just like, I think it like kind of like is trying to like approach the mellowness of adulthood and like kind of verging towards like death a little bit.
Okay. Well, especially if like, I mean, obviously there's the two versions of this album, but especially,
oh yeah, of course,
I guess really either version. Cause the death version, of course, you end with Meet My Maker, which, you know, literally about death. Right. And then the life version, you end with Falling Away, which is like, I mean, it's also, I think, a song about an ending, but a different type of ending.
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll...
Yeah,
I was just going to say, like, just the idea of what you said about, like, a concept album of, like, life and death. Some of the reviews talk about that a lot, and I had a lot of fun finding reviews for this because I found some reviews that I hadn't even read before.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's interesting because this was like the follow-up to their like big album. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Young and Hopeless was sort of like them sort of, you know, debuting. It wasn't their debut album, but it was like kind of their debut album because
the first thing most people heard from them.
Yeah, because it had their like first hit, right? And I don't know, they were a very different band on that album as opposed to on Chronicles. And it caught most people off guard, that little turn they took. And I saw a lot of reviews were calling this the sophomore slump, which is funny because it wasn't the sophomore slump. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, it sort of like was, people weren't like very happy about this album.
No. And it's like, I mean, this is such a theme throughout their whole career, but like, it's kind of like GC could never really do right because they would like take turns and change a little bit with different albums. And then, but it's like whatever they did, people wanted them to do something else. But then
you
would see some bands do the same thing for a few albums and people would get sick of it. So I don't know, like, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah. And I feel like also the climate was just like changing a lot. I mean, there was a time when like, pop punk clearly had this era that like, I mean, I don't think it's as popular as it used to be. It's sort of like branched out a little bit and they're more like subgroups of it.
Yeah. But
there was a point where that was all that was playing on MTV. And it was, we had like Vans and all this stuff. And there was like a whole like culture surrounding it that just ceases to exist now. And it makes sense that they would like make a turn and like try to cater to something that seemed more popular at the time. And I think they did that with like, I guess like after, or even a little bit with Good Morning Revival.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point for sure. I'm going to limit myself here because I go off on such a rabbit hole, but like, you know, I think about like Olivia Rodrigo, who, you know, a lot of people say has a lot of like emo or pop punk influence, and she totally does, but she's not like a pop punk artist that started as like a DIY band, you know, hitting the road in a van kind of thing. Like she was on a Disney show, right?
Yeah.
And not to like discredit her creativity or her artistry at all, but she just like the whole background is very different, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can hear those trace influences too. I feel the genre has sort of just kind of saturated a little bit and it's just like, you can hear it in almost like every like pop song now, I feel like.
Well, yeah, like MGK, I mean, Willow, both artists that have worked mm-hmm. with Travis Barker a lot. But there's like that differentiation between like that sort of mainstream sort of pop punk stuff and like the bands that are still doing it in the underground.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Well, cool. So a little more about Secrets. I mean, this song was not a single. It was written by Benti and Joel Madden. Per setlist.fm, it was never like officially played live. Obviously, setlist.fm is not always accurate, but I'm kind of like, I feel like this is like a pretty upbeat song. I could see this being pretty fun live, but I don't know. Like, I don't know. It was performed at an AOL session, I think in late 2004 or early 2005. I'm not sure the exact date, but I don't know if those were like something fans could watch, like be in person, or if it was like just a thing that was kind of recorded.
This sounds so familiar to me. I feel like I've probably like watched or heard, listened to
I'm
it
sure,
back
yeah.
in the day. but yeah, from what I know, I don't think those are open to like a live audience.
Yeah. I don't know. We have a lot to talk about with Secrets, Gora, but first I want to help our listeners get to know you. And the first question I like to ask everyone is, when did you first hear Good Charlotte and what were your first thoughts on them?
I believe I first listened to Good Charlotte somewhere around 2004 or 2005. So right around when this album came out,
sure.
I was like 9 or 10 at the time. And I was really into Bop magazine. And at that point, Hilary Duff was dating Joel, and they were like, I feel like the twins were always like the centerfold, like, you know, pinup posters in Bop magazine. And I was like, so curious. So I went to the mall, I went to the music store, and I was like, do you have anything by Good Charlotte? And this was like the only CD available. And I like listened to, I had like a little Discman at that point, and I was just like listening to it on repeat. I was like obsessed. I thought it was so clever. And I was obviously like this angsty kid, and I just, it was just like fueling me. I think like the singles definitely stood out to me, but also like, I don't know. It was, there's something about, I mean, I feel like at the core, Good Charlotte, like almost had that boy band effect on me. Mm-hmm. Like,
no, they totally did. And I had, this would have been like fall 2020. I think I had Maria Sherman on, and she's a music journalist. She had just written a book about boy bands, and she agreed. Like, she said she felt like Good Charlotte wasn't like fully a boy band, but that they really had that effect on a lot of people.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they had like, the twins had such chemistry, and even on stage, and I don't know, they were just like,
they were the teeny bopper magazines.
Yeah, exactly. And they had that look about them, but even their songs at the core were like pop songs to me.
Yeah.
Those harmonies and everything. So yeah, they definitely, it was like my, I guess like my first instance of fandom. I was just completely obsessed. I was like daydreaming about like Joel singing all these songs to me. Mm-hmm. Every you mm-hmm. was like me. And then I saw them live like shortly thereafter. I was like pretty sure on my way to school, and I saw like a poster that Joel and Benji were playing a live session debuting songs of their forthcoming album. And I was like, oh my God, I have to go see this. And it was a Hard Rock Cafe at a mall.
Incredible.
And it was the weirdest thing. So I was like, Dad, please take me.
So it was in like the Hard Rock Cafe, like the restaurant?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. I know there's like a Hard Rock Live in Florida. It's like, but wow. I love that.
So this was in Jakarta, Indonesia. Right. And this mall does not exist anymore. Like malls, I guess, like don't exist anymore. But it was this sort of like, it had a stage, and then there was sort of like an upstairs where you like could like drink and eat. And I remember like Tommy Lee played a show there like not that long after. It was such a wild time. But basically, if you bought like a $10 Coke, you could go see this band.
All right.
Good Charlotte. And So I was just there with my dad, and it was just Benji and Joel like singing songs off Good Morning Revival, which hadn't been out yet. And they debuted like The River, A Beautiful Place, and March On, I believe. And they sang some old songs, and it was my first like real show. So it was like a magical experience.
I'm realizing now, it would have been, I was either in or just out of college. I went to a show at the Hard Rock in Philly. This band, I Call Fives, played there. But I'm just curious, like, so you went to this show. Were the other people there like people that wanted to see Good Charlotte, or was it mostly just like people who were at the Hard Rock because they want to go to Hard Rock?
Oh, it was definitely people who were there to see Good Charlotte. They had like this massive fan base.
Oh my God.
And people were like, the mall was just like filled with people
incredible.
Coming out to see Good Charlotte. It was really fun.
Incredible. I love that.
What a time though.
Oh my God. No, that sounds incredible. I've heard so many people have shared stories about these various like mall acoustic sets. Right. And I'm like, I wish I had gotten to catch one of those. Like, so cool.
Magical time.
So cool. Well, Cora, we had connected. I mean, I reached out to you, I think it was like this February, but I have been familiar with your writing for a while. You wrote this really wonderful essay called Good Charlotte Revival, The Chronicles of a Young and Helpless Love Affair, which I've quoted a bunch of times on this show. And I just want to know a little more. I mean, you're a writer now, and I just want to know a little bit more about, you know, discovering music and GC and other bands in that whole world as a teenager, and like how that relates to, or how that helped you kind of become a writer and start writing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I like didn't really know what I was getting myself into, but it's like, I think shortly after I saw them live for the first time, I was just like really just obsessed. And I like started listening to all these interviews with the band. And I think there was, I so vividly remember one interview that was like, I feel like it was on Paul's birthday in like 2005 or something. And they were talking about, they were talking about the Smiths, and they were talking about the Cure, and they were talking about how much they hate Pearl Jam and all this, you know, all this drama. And I don't know. I was just like, I was just suddenly like hungry for more. I was so curious. And I started listening to like Minor Threat and Social Distortion. And I was just like, really just like, I feel like they were just like my gateway for like a lot of this culture. And yeah, that curiosity or that sense of community also, like, I feel like there was such a MySpace community at that point, and there's such just like an online community where you could find like, because I grew up in Indonesia, so I didn't know too many people at that point who were listening to Good Charlotte or like pop punk in general. So it was nice to find that community, and I was kind of just like eager to find out more. I think that really like opened this sense of curiosity in me. And like, as for how this connects to writing, I guess I really just like, they really made me want to be a musician more than anything. Like, I really wanted to be in a band. And it's that sort of like, I remember like Waldorf Worldwide, like listening to it for the first time. And I was, it's just like, yeah, I want to stay up all night and like fuck around and see what I can do, or like make something out of nothing. That whole idea, like, as like a 10-year-old, really excited me. And I guess I was just like, this is it. I found my calling. I don't know what it means, but yeah. So I guess I started writing about music almost by accident. And after that, I was just like, I guess this is just what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
But yeah. But I think that enthusiasm from like fandom definitely carried over into writing. Mm-hmm. And I always like aim to capture the same intensity that I feel when I'm listening to a really good band for the first time, or like for the 100th time.
Yeah. No, I love what you say about enthusiasm. And I think like, I have a somewhat similar story to you of how I got into like, you know, music, journalism and everything, that I also wanted to be a musician. And then I found myself writing about the songs I wanted to write more than I found myself actually writing songs. but I like what you said about enthusiasm. And I have this whole theory, and I'm curious, like I've mentioned it to a couple other people I've had on the show that are writers, but I'm curious what you think. But I have this whole theory that, like, you know, we both know there was a period of time where like, I really, for a lot of Good Charlotte's career, there was a lot of negative reviews. And as we were just talking about a few minutes ago, I kind of have this theory that like part of the reason over time with a more recent album, Good Charlotte's gotten better reviews, is that the people who were fans in, you know, the early days of the band are now old enough to be writers, to be the critics.
Yeah. I think that's true. And I feel like, I mean, I think this is true, just not even with Good Charlotte, but like music criticism all around. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was just, there's this album I really like called More Adventurous by Rilo Kiley. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But it's just like all of like the criticism around it is just like calling the lead singer like very like kind of like synonyms for sexy, and just sort of not really talking about the music itself. And it just feels very like music, like male music critics kind of on an ego trip. And I feel like a lot of that sort of like criticism can be qualified as that. And it's I think what's changed is we have more like women in music criticism. I think that helps a lot. And obviously there's like the poptivism movement where like pop, it's now more socially acceptable to listen to pop music than it used to be. And there was like the standard of what is good music, and anything other than that wasn't cool, was looked down upon.
Well, I mean, one artist that comes to mind for me is Taylor Swift, which like definitely still gets a lot of hate, but like, I will say, I feel like in recent years, there's been a lot more like appreciation for her talent and a lot more really positive reviews of, you know, Folklore, Evermore, and really positive feedback to the Taylor's version re-records. And I mean, there's definitely something to be said about kind of, it's like becoming cool to like pop, but also you had a very good point that there are just more female music critics now than there were, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people, I mean, I feel like criticism itself isn't as stiff shouldered anymore. You're allowed to like have more opinions and like not sort of adhere to like this standard that is being upheld by, I don't know, the the male critics of our generation, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, it's like the male critics, not every male critic, but there's like a certain, I think, flavor of male critic that I say male because generally the people with this attitude are male. Kind of think they are right and that their opinion is right, but really they're just as subjective and biased as others. They just are so convinced that they're right that they don't see how biased they are, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of like posturing going on, I think.
That's a good word for it. Yeah. Well, I want to ask about No Contact, which is this outlet you started. I mean, you had essays published, just to name a few: Literary Hub, The Toast, Volume One, Brooklyn. So you have this outlet, No Contact, and I want to know more about starting that and just about like connecting with some of the other writers that have contributed.
Totally. So my husband and I started No Contact in April 2020, like pretty much right after the pandemic hit New York.
Right. Okay.
And so basically like we met in grad school, my husband and I, we were studying writing together, and basically overnight, like classes were canceled, the streets were deserted, and like we couldn't really leave our apartment or like see anyone. And like we were just like very restless, and we're pretty social people. We were accustomed to having friends over and like listening to records together and just like kind of having conversations about writing and art.
Yeah.
And less pretentious things too. But yeah, so we were just like really restless. We didn't know what to do. So we like sort of were like, what if we always flirted with the idea of starting a magazine. So we were like, what if we start a literary magazine? And we started like brainstorming names, and this kind of made No Contact made sense for the moment that we were in. And so we were like, we just like asked our friends in grad school to basically like send us their shit. And we were also working for Columbia Journal at that point. So we had some writers we were working with, and I used to work in the music industry before that. So I kind of like, we were just pooling in contacts of people who we knew were good writers. And we compiled the first three issues, just reaching out to people we liked. And after that, we kind of opened to general submissions. So now people can just send us their work. And I think we get like 30 to 40 submissions like every other day.
That's so cool. That's so great.
Yeah. It's awesome. I really love doing it. It definitely like helped us stay sane through the pandemic.
Look, I started this podcast, like, I mean, I had the idea right before lockdown, and then like 3 days after lockdown hit, I was like, all right, I'm getting to work on this. Like,
hell yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, the last question I want to ask you before we get dive deep into secrets is about your novel called Notes that is coming out, I think, later this year. All I've really seen about it is that it's told via the Notes app. Your publisher called it, I think this was on Twitter, said it was funny, daring, and unlike anything we've ever read. What else can you share about it?
Yeah, it is told entirely through the Notes app, and it's sort of about the fear of being alone and sort of like shuffling through toxic relationships and the like recognizing patterns, but not like refusing to break them. Mm-hmm. And I was really interested in the idea of like writing without an audience, because like the Notes app is notes that you take for yourself. And I was kind of curious to see how that would play out, but I kind of learned that it's really impossible to write without an audience, and the audience is yourself. And that sort of kind of plays into the idea of learning to be alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, I like what you said, the audience is yourself, because like whether you're writing in a journal or like I've used my Notes app, if I'm like anxious about something, I will like kind of like journal and be like, try to work through my thoughts in the Notes app, because that's what's there with me. But
yeah,
it is like, it's for my eyes, right? It's not for no one. It's like, so I can see and I can kind of process. So that's my audience there. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And it's sort of the idea that like, I don't know if you do this, but like, before I send like a text to someone, I'm going to like go to my Notes app and like write down all those things and then cross it out. And I go through like several drafts before I like send it to someone. So all of that kind of made it into the book.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. Like I'm definitely better about it now, but you know, I had people in my life a few years ago that were did not treat me the way I want to be treated. And that would cause a lot of like spiraling and ruminating. And there would be like drafts and drafts and drafts and drafts of like what I was going to text them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Oh my God. No, I love this. I can't wait to read this. This is so exciting.
I hope you like it.
I'm sure I will. Well, let's get into Secrets. It's the song of the hour. So we connected. I mean, it was like January, February, and I'm super happy to be talking to you. Why did you want to talk about Secrets in particular?
It's off like my first Good Charlotte album, I guess. It's definitely a place of nostalgia for me. I think I like distinctly remember like tweeting. I had Twitter when I was way too young to have Twitter, and I would just tweet at the band. It's so embarrassing. And I was like, I love this song. You guys are so cool. And they replied to me and were like, I think it was Benji who like replied to me. It's like, this is one of our favorites too. And like, we're so glad you like it. It means a lot to us. And I was like, this is so cool. It's like kind of the perfect song if you are like 10 and going through your like emo phase and you are mad at everyone and you can just like put on your...
That's kind of like the age, I think, like, you know, preteen, that's kind of the age where I think you start to really realize that you're an individual outside of like your parents' child. And
oh yeah,
you start to just experience a lot of emotions. I mean, part of it obviously just being hormonal and puberty, but like you just experience a lot of emotions and have a lot of new like social experiences too that also contribute to new emotions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And this album's so dramatic. It's so dramatic. And this song in particular is just so dramatic. It's like that visual of like dancing in the rain. It's just like, I think I was just like kind of swooning all over the song.
Yeah.
And it's also like, it's a hopeful song. And I think it's like, it has that angry guitar, but it's also like hopeful.
Yeah.
And I think that probably that like it's very cathartic, I guess, if you're a kid and wanting to kind of like step out.
Something I think about with this album, so I'm 30 years old now. I would have like recently turned 13 when this album came out. And obviously I was like extremely, you know, angsty, right? Like I was 13. I just discovered black eyeliner, right? But at the time, like all I kind of could think about was like, oh, well, Good Charlotte, like they're older than me. They're adults, they're grown ups. But now I look back and I'm like, wow, they were like, you know what, 24, probably when they recorded this album, they probably would have been 25 when it came out. And now I'm kind of like, wow, like on the one hand, like some of these feelings they express feel so like youth, like teenagery, like that angst. But on the other hand, I'm like, no, some of this is like real dark. And like 24 as a 30-year-old, I'm like, wow, 24 seems so young.
24 is pretty young. It's weird to like go through that. I feel like I go through that all the time when I do the math, because I remember when I was listening to them when I was 11, like doing the math and the age difference and being like, okay, he's 17 years older than me or something like that. I don't even remember anymore. But yeah, it's just so weird. They were really young, and they were so much younger. How old were they when their debut album came out?
So it would have been fall of 2000. So the twins would have been 21 when it came out.
Yeah,
but they probably were, you know, 20 when they were recording a lot of it.
Right. Yeah. They're so young. But yeah, I mean, I feel like Secrets and a lot of the latter half of this album kind of like hold on to the themes more than like a core narrative.
Mm.
If that makes sense. I feel like they're very like this and the truth, like they're focusing on sort of completing this cycle of life and death rather than I'm trying to think of a
rather than like a moment of a story kind of.
Yeah, like We Believe has a full narrative, right? Like
right.
There's a son, there's a this, funeral, this, I don't know.
This song, I mean, and as I was going to bring up, okay, what is the song about? What does it mean? But I think you have a good point that it doesn't really have like a narrative in the sense that it's telling a story.
Yeah.
But it shows an emotion, but it's not so much a story.
I feel like it's more a mood rather than anything. I feel like the sort of like arrangement does so much for the song. It's like such a big feeling.
Yeah.
And it strangely reminds me of Hold On a little bit, or I feel like it's trying to do the same thing as Hold On in the sense that it's like saying, I'll rip out my insides and leave them on display, and together we can dance in the rain and like face the past and fight again.
Do you know? Yeah. And I want to ask in a second kind of what your kind of interpretation of this is a little bit more, but one song that comes to mind as we talk about how this song doesn't have much of like a narrative so much. Do you know the song This Must Be the Place by Talking Heads?
Yeah, of course. Great song.
So one of the things that when writing it, he wanted to write a love song without any narrative elements was like the whole thing with writing that, like about the feeling, about the mood, but without like narrative elements. So that comes to mind a little as we talk about this song. I mean, we've talked in terms of what the song is about, you know, you said mood is a good word. When we think about like interpretations of it, I mean, pretty directly, I think the narrator is kind of saying, all right, everybody has secrets. Nobody shares everything, but maybe having secrets is okay. But I don't know. Do you get like a positive mood out of this, or more of a like, no, like I have dark secrets and I'm never going to share them with anybody?
I think it's doing both, but I think it's like trying to inspire hope, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like they're like, everybody has skeletons that they hide, but it's also saying we'll wake up and fight again. I think that's like a hopeful message. And I think that I think it's like almost aggressively hopeful.
Aggressively hopeful. That's a good way to put it. I like the line there's the line that, you know, I'll rip out my insides and leave them on display for you tonight. And I wonder with that, like, you know, is this the narrator of this song, is this person like having some kind of a revelation about, oh, it's okay to share my secrets because maybe for the first time they've met someone they want to share them with?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is about like vulnerability, right? Like, or like sharing those, the past or whatever you're trying to, or those secrets with, mm-hmm. with someone else. And I think it kind of makes perfect sense for this to flow into the truth because of that almost.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, that's the point with the album, right? Like every song like is supposed to like make sense flowing into the next.
Okay. No, I like that. I mean, let me see if I'm like, understanding what you're trying to say, but I'm getting something about like, this song is showing like, oh wow, like I've met someone that has like made it feel okay to share my secrets. And I feel like I'm realizing vulnerability is like, okay, vulnerability is good. And then the truth is kind of like, all right, well, I'm going to be vulnerable again. And I just want you to be vulnerable in return.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
From my, I guess my interpretation of it at least.
Yeah. Have you watched or heard much of Brené Brown?
No, I haven't.
She's like, I guess she's a psychologist, but she's really well known for her work on vulnerability. So she's very known for that. Something I want to touch on with this song, like where do you think this song fits like genre wise? Like, is it emo? Like we talked about angst a lot, but like, is this emo? Is this punk? Is this pop punk? I mean, I have my thoughts, but like, I'm really curious what you think, where this song fits.
I think there was a review that called this genre suburban breakup punk. And I'm like, not really over that. I thought that was great. But I don't know. I still feel like this is a pop song with like, kind of like a sort of like emo shadow. I don't know. I feel like they're clearly like leaning into Billie's level 27, like emo.
This whole album is like so goth, like so Billie. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's just like so perfectly 2004. I don't know, like mall emo pop somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm. I think I wrote down alt goth rock, but I think you have a really good point about this song being very pop, and like that's something you really can't ignore when talking about this song, that like it's very pop. And like, you know, possibly if you change the arrangement a little, put things in more of a major key, this could have been like a radio single, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of backstory for this, I really did not find any backstory on this song. but I, you know, I'm always like, oh, I want to find a backstory. I want to like either hear like what inspired a song, or like any stories from recording. But I think with this, I'm like kind of okay that it's a mystery because the whole song is secrets.
Secrets.
Yeah. It also, I'll also acknowledge like Googling Good Charlotte secrets interview. I mean, nothing really comes up because secrets is just a word people say, right? So it was a little hard to like, I mean, I sorted through like so many pages of Google results, but you know, it can be a little hard to figure out it with any song that's like just a common word name. It can be a little hard to figure out like, okay, what's about this song and what is just, you know, some interview where they use this word.
Totally. No, that makes sense. Yeah. I couldn't find anything on it either, except for that memory. I like tried to like search for that tweet that Benji tweeted at me like 2 decades ago. Yeah. I know it's been forever. Yeah. And it no longer exists, but they did say it meant a lot to them.
I think he might've changed his Twitter handle at some point over the years. Like, I think he was Benji Madden at one point, and now I think he's Benjamin Madden. So
cool.
I don't know. I will say I remember from the early days of Twitter, like getting the text notifications, like
oh, where man, you could like set up
and you would get text notifications and then you could like text to tweet.
What a time.
Yeah. And I definitely would get like texts of like every time Good Charlotte tweeted or any member of Good Charlotte tweeted.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. It was incredible. Well, Cora, do you have any memories or stories that you want to share about Secrets?
No, I think I think that was like my major note, the tweet moment shared with Benji.
Pretty incredible. I mean, that's hard to beat.
Yeah, no, but I definitely remember carrying the liner notes of this album to school every day and just like going through them. Like it was like the novel of the millennium. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I was just like really obsessed because it had all the artwork from like, I think it was like all Billy's artwork. I was like trying to trace it. I was like trying to like memorize all the lyrics. It was a great time.
I that's something I miss is just being able to like look at liner notes. I mean, nowadays, like I hear something new that I love and like, yeah, one of the first things I do is like, I'll go and like read the lyrics online, but I don't know. Liner notes were just having that physical thing was really special.
Yeah, absolutely. I miss that because like nobody's buying CDs anymore. And it's like record sleeves are not exactly the same. It's like this giant like booklet.
I buy CDs still sometimes, but like, because I want the physical thing and I want to look at the liner notes, but like the last Angels and Airwaves album came out in September and like I pre-ordered the CD and some stickers and I spent $60 on a hoodie, but like I wanted the CD because I wanted to look at the liner notes, but I haven't listened to the CD a single time. I just like, I wanted it. Like I wanted the thing, you know?
Hey, you never know. I feel like they might just make a comeback at some point. Cause like there's something about a physical object that is like so great.
Yeah.
That like, I feel like streaming can never just like compare to.
No. And it's like ownership. Cause like if someone were to take an album off streaming, like the Madden Brothers album is not on streaming.
Yeah. I noticed that. I was very, very disappointed. Cause I really like that album a lot.
It's on, you can find it on YouTube, but I don't know if it's like an official upload. The only like, cause I've done one Madden Brothers album, although this has like come up a few times, one Madden Brothers episode, although this has come up a few times, is that the theory I have is just like label issues, or, you know, whoever owns the rights, some issues with that, but who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely have been on YouTube streaming that.
Yeah. Well, I also like to talk about other Good Charlotte songs the track relates to. You mentioned Hold On, which I think is great. And I really liked what you said about kind of the segue into the truth, which is like kind of showing vulnerability and wanting another person to show vulnerability to you. One that comes to mind for me is Face the Strange, which was a B-side from Good Morning Revival. I think it was like a bonus track on one of the CD singles or something. And one of my favorite GC songs, but that song is also about like, is like specifically about facing kind of those weird or difficult or dark parts.
Yeah. It's also like, I think similarly conceptual.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that song a lot too.
Yeah.
The bonus songs.
Yeah. Well, let's read some reviews. We have, ooh. I will say like in general, this album did not get very good reviews. In general, Good Charlotte has not gotten, especially for the early part of their career, did not get very good reviews on the whole. But this song seemed to get like decent reception. Like, so AllMusic gave the album 3.5 out of 5. They also had a user average rating of 3.5 out of 5. Joel Madden has also matured since The Young and Hopeless. His newly developed husky tenor suits him well on the more introspective material, but can still belt out the rousing punk pop choruses of Walk Away, Predictable, and Secrets.
Rousing.
Yeah. I like what they said about the husky tenor. Because if you think about how he sang on the first album versus this album, it's definitely his voice got a little deeper, huskier.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. And I didn't think about that until now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that makes sense if he was like 20 when he recorded the first album and 24 at this point. That checks out.
Yeah. Entertainment Weekly gave this album a B+. They said, modest moshers are only a fraction of their repertoire now. Instead, they're a surprisingly awesome and diverse modern rock act capable of aching new wave sob stories, Ghost of You, mopey emo Secrets, and lots of angst-ridden suburban breakup punk. I love this sentence. The sentence is so good. Whoever wrote this sentence, I mean, you deserve an award. Aided by the fact that lead Yelper Joel Madden always sounds as if someone just ran over his dog.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Incredible. Incredible. I don't like it. It's very harsh. Yelper. Yeah. I'm like, it's extremely harsh.
That is.
And I don't think I agree with it, but I'm like, I sort of get where they're coming from, but I'm also like, that's very harsh. I hope you're okay. It's kind of an incredible sentence just for like the choice of words. And like, I just want to know what caused this person to think this and say that.
Yeah, definitely sounds like a personal vendetta at that point. Oof. But also like, speaking of their dog, like I wish there was more of a Cash Dogs song on this album, because I feel like had that on Young and Hopeless. And then that sort of, because like Wondering, I think, was written about Cash Dog.
Yeah.
Which blew my mind when I found out. And I think they recorded him barking in
Day That I Die. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
was really fun.
I had Jesse Cannon on to talk about Wondering, and he was like, he said that Wondering, he was like, this is like stoner guy dog thoughts.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In the best way.
Oh yeah, in the best way. No, and I know that Joel has German Shepherds, and I know Benji has, I think Benji has like 4 rescue dogs. Like he's got several. Let's get back to these reviews. This one from Space City Rock, I'm pretty sure like a lot of these reviews I had read before and like quoted when we talked about other songs. This one from Space City Rock, I was super happy to find, because I don't think I had seen this review before. So once you've hit the big time, playing in your high school band, become ridiculously popular, been featured on the covers of magazines from Here to Kingdom Come, have 2 hit records under your belt, and been showered with equal doses of adoration and criticism, what do you do? Well, obviously, you craft a complex, ambitious song cycle about life and death. Duh. Actually, I'm not kidding. With their latest album, The Chronicles of Life and Death, teen hero pop punkers Good Charlotte have jumped feet first into the realm of the concept album. Of course, sometimes the lyrics are just too cheesy, even for my inner child to tolerate. Secrets, for one, is so hopeful and so focused on standing up and believing in all that good stuff that even its faux creepy imagery can't save it from being a candidate for a feel-good teen special on Nickelodeon someday.
Definitely very harsh.
Very harsh. I kind of get what they say about, I mean, feel-good teen special on Nickelodeon. I'm like, I feel like they say that implying that that's bad, but I do think of like, you know, what you said before about how much of a pop song this is, right?
Oh yeah.
But I think this person was definitely writing from a place of pop is bad and pop is like immature. I kind of get that vibe from that sentence. Like
it
pop
definitely
is for
sounds
teens.
Like it was written.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it was written in 2004.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. New York Post did this, like, it was kind of like a big article that was like interviewed the band and sort of like reviewed and talked about the album. They said, the disc is at its best when it's wrapped in the snap and crackle of pop songs such as I Just Want to Live, Secrets, and The World is Black. Those tunes, bright and fast, make up for the sappy mosh mush ballads that also pepper the record.
I love how much mosh is just thrown around. There's like modest moshers, which yes, is a mouthful.
And mosh ballads. I think there was like, I don't know, maybe there was the pressure to like make you use words that sound cool, and like mosh was really associated with, you know, concerts and Warp Tour and punk shows and everything in this whole scene.
Yeah, I think it's the idea. I feel like people were so protective about the scene that the Charlotte felt like the kind of band that was writing pop songs but dressing like the scene, and it would people were very, very divided about that from like the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah, divided is a good point about it. Plugged In by Focus on the Family included this under pro-social content. So that's their section where they basically, I mean, I'm sure they have a more eloquent way of describing it, but basically pro-social content is where they say like what parts of a piece of media are like acceptable for your good Christian conservative, you know, well-behaved children. And they said, rather than live a lie, a man braces for the truth and is willing to work through relational secrets.
I had no idea what that was, but now that I have some context, that's kind of amazing. Yeah.
It's, I plugged in, there's, plugged in, there's another one just like this too, but it's interesting because they've reviewed a few of the GC albums and like, kind of the theme is like, they like when Good Charlotte talks about hope, which they do a lot, right? But, and they like when Good Charlotte talks about God, you know, and having faith, which comes up quite often in their music. They don't like when they talk about like rebellion, like the review of The Young and the Hopeless on this site, I think said, like called out the anthem for saying that they didn't like high school. So it's
ridiculous.
They're kind of like Good Charlotte's kind of divisive, you know, in the plugged in Focus on the Family world.
That's so interesting because they always, I mean, that's the thing. They always felt like a pretty like family safe, like clean band because they were, they were fairly religious. They had like songs, several songs about their mother and like, I don't know, they were like family oriented in their lyrics, I think up until like, almost like every album, and they had like tattoos of, you know, Jesus on their bodies and stuff. So I'm like surprised that, I don't know, that like talking about rebelling against high school was like a thing for certain communities.
Let's read, we're gonna read one more review and then we'll read some fan comments. Stylist gave it a B- and said they've swapped the Clash and Minor Threat for the Cure and Morrissey, which by the way, I think that exactly is what they did. And that I think is very intentionally what they did. Like Joel Madden, like loves Morrissey. Defiant cultural commentary for morose internal reflection. This isn't entirely unrewarding. Secrets and Mountain are fine addition to their open-hearted mall punk catalog. The former is what the Moz Jerry Finn collab should have sounded like.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Mall punk, yeah. That's another big word that was used like around this time. Mall punk.
I feel like it's still used in mostly the pejorative because they're talking about like, when people talk about mall punk, they're talking about like Good Charlotte and My Chemical Romance and Blaine Ginsome.
Simple Plan. Kind of like
Simple Plan. What happened to them?
They put out a new album yesterday.
Oh, really?
Really?
I had no idea they were still making music. That's
They're on tour with Sum 41 right now. They put out an album yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. But they had been touring a lot, but like their last album before this was like 2016. And the one before that, I think, was like 2011 or something.
I remember that one. I just didn't think they did anything after that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, like they've toured. Simple Plan has definitely toured more than Good Charlotte in the past, like, 5 years. Like, Simple Plan has toured a ton.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Let's read some comments from Song Meanings. Pumpkin Queen said, "This is such an awesome song. It completely captures something that we've all been through, and I find that pretty darn cool. It's reassuring in a way." Scrap That said, "I hated this song. It took me about 7 times to realize it was good." Broken said, "I think it's about being yourself and being open, which I find very hard to do." Sick of Alone said, "I think that it is saying that we keep our secrets inside to keep from the pain that the secrets will put us through if anyone knows, but it says that they have decided to face the pain and fight again." And then Fallen Leaves said, "Nobody wants to embarrass themselves in front of anyone else, so they hide their dirty little secrets away. Anywho, I don't really like this song a whole lot. I'm not entirely sure why." I will say there was a lot of fighting in the comments on songmeanings.com for this one. Like, a lot of people, because there were, like, some people that said, "Oh, Joel is so hot, Benji's so hot." And then a lot of people would, like, criticize, like, "Why are you talking about how hot they are?" And then other people would, you know, kind of clap back, like, "Oh, well, who cares? Like, people can say whatever they want." Like, there was a lot of that when I was looking through the comments for this song.
Oh, man, I missed the internet, like, 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, now it's like, I mean, I guess TikTok comments can be pretty vicious, but I feel like TikTok comments are a lot more in real time even than like Song Meanings comments were.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll read some YouTube comments on a fan upload by BETD23. Challenger said, "Don't cry. The music is beautiful. Embrace it. It helped me get through problems I thought were massive at the time. I wish songs could help me get better as easily as they used to and as well as this band's music did. Enjoy and have an awesome life." I kind of think this person is like 18, like max like 18, and is like, "You know, I had a really tough time when I was like 14, but like I got through it. I got better. And like, I'm 18 and I'm old and wise now." That's the vibe I get. I mean, look, I have no idea. I don't know who this person is, but I just say, like, that's the kind of thing I would have written when I was like 18 and thought I was like old and wise and experienced.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Morale said, "If I was introduced to GC for the first time today, I would think they totally sucked, but I would have died 1,000 times over for this band when I was in the 5th and 6th grade. Currently listening to the entire Chronicles of Life and Death album while I fall asleep."
Cool.
Yeah. So the last one I want to read is from Eduardo for Coffee. "For any Aussies out there, can anyone else hear Jebediah guitar riffs from Ski Trip 1997? I'm guessing it was sampled from Jebediah." So I don't know if you got a chance to listen to this song, but Jebediah is a band, and they have a song called Ski Trip. Did we be able to listen to it?
No. I was having a hard time decoding that last comment.
I did too, but I was like, all right, I gotta look into it, because sometimes people like mention, "Oh, this sounds like some other song," and so I looked it up. I hear a little of like the melody of the guitars in the intro. It does sound relatively similar. I don't think it was sampled, but I could hear a possibility of like they knew this song and they were trying to like be inspired by it, but I don't hear it as close enough that like it was sampled.
Okay, I have to give it a listen. I was certain that comment was spam, but
I was let me look into it. Let me see what it is. Well, Gara, this has been so awesome. As we wrap up, I would love to know, how has Secrets held up for you over time?
You know, when I was younger, it helped me get through. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if it has the same magic for me as it did when I listened to it the first time, but it definitely makes me feel so nostalgic, and I'll definitely be listening to Chronicles of Life and Death as I fall asleep tonight.
Yes, yes. Amazing. Well, what has Good Charlotte meant to you over the years, and how has that changed?
Yeah, like they were my first band that I was like obsessed with, and they'll always hold that like special place in my heart. They like introduced me to so much, and I don't know. I feel like I just like learned so much watching all the documentaries, and I don't know if you remember Fast Future Generation.
Oh yeah, that was the whole thing. That was the one from Japan, right?
Japan, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, I think I learned what it's like to be like a super enthusiastic fangirl. Mm-hmm. And that I feel like I still have that sort of intensity in me that I like feel towards other things now. I obviously like am not as, I sort of like stopped listening to Good Charlotte after Good Morning Revival, mm-hmm. but yeah, they definitely hold like a really like special place in my heart, because I don't know, they were like my first band.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that made all that much sense, but.
No, I love that. Do you have any last words about Secrets, about Good Charlotte, or about yourself that you want to share?
Not in particular.
All right. Well, Cora, as we wrap up, two more questions for you. The first is, so I have a Generation GC and Friends Spotify playlist. So I include the song we talk about, as well as, honestly, I'll probably put This Must Be the Place, because we talked about that a little bit. But what's something you'd like to recommend to our listeners? I mean, anything you've been listening to lately that's not Good Charlotte.
That's not Good Charlotte. Scott Street by Phoebe Bridgers.
Perfect. Perfect. And thank you again for coming on the show. Where can people keep up with you? Do you want to share your website or social media?
Yeah, of course. And thank you for having me. My socials are at Blood and Gora, and my website is goroshaker.com.
Perfect. Gora, thank you again so much for coming on this show. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. Last time, we talked about the story of My Old Man from The Young and the Hopeless. On our next episode, we'll be talking about a song from Good Morning Revival. My name is Molly Huddleston once again, and as always, I've been your host, as well as the producer, creator, and editor of this podcast. You can follow Generation GC at Generation GC Pod, P-O-D, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can follow me, Molly, at M Huddleston, M-H-U-D-E-L-S-O-N, on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to stay tuned for more.